Hi, I'm Mel Majoros. I am a 7-year cancer survivor. My blog, The Cancer Warrior, is one of the top 10 breast cancer blogs, according to blogs.com. I'm here to bring a fresh, upbeat perspective to a topic that to some may seem scary. A positive mental attitude got me through my cancer, and I hope to share that with you. So, Facebook, once again, I find my guest, Stephen Brown. He is an author, he's a cancer survivor, and he's also a friend of Ethan Zone, is how I found his book and information about him. So why don't we just jump right into it? How are you today, Stephen?
I am wonderful, Mel. Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
Oh, you're very welcome. So tell us a little bit about yourself, and we'll go from there.
Okay. Well, nothing too exciting, I don't think. I'm a multi-sport junkie. I'm a husband, father, and now grandfather. Ironman triathlete, marathoner, and have been a multi-sport junkie most of my life. But I guess my proudest merit of honor is as that of a leukemia survivor. So I was diagnosed with chronic lymphocytic leukemia in 2006, February 24th. I will never forget the day, as will most cancer warriors not forget their days.
Right.
And I went through 4 weeks of treatment, followed by 2 years of follow-up, mm-hmm. and then had some minor relapses back in 2012 and 2013 that required a little bit of additional treatment. But, you know, with a very targeted monoclonal antibody that works really well for me. So, you know, I'm one of the lucky ones that, A, responded well to treatment, and, B, I have a go-to drug that works in the event and, you know, if and when it's needed.
Awesome. So looking at your website, Remission Man, you have...
Remission Man.
You have a lot of books. You are an accomplished author.
Well, let's go back to your first statement. I've written a bunch of stuff. I don't know how accomplished I am, and I you know, I struggle with the word author, although I guess if I've written something, I'm an author. But I've never set out to write any epic story or novel or award-winning anything. It's just it helps me with, you know, it helps me to process things. You know, writing has always just been a therapeutic and a creative release.
Yes.
You know, it's a way to channel things. So I did the same thing with the cancer. So
same thing with your...
Call it what you will, but...
Same thing with your Ironman, your triathletes. You focus on that, and then you focus on writing.
Yeah, and you know what? What I've learned over the years is this stuff all ties together. You know, whether you're talking about... You know, just life experiences and the trials and tribulations of normal everyday living, or Ironman and multi-sport racing, or if you're faced with a diagnosis and you have, you know, all the ups and downs associated with disease and diagnosis, you process a lot of this stuff all the same way. You know what I mean? So
yes.
It doesn't really matter what you're faced with. A lot of what you have to do, there's a lot of similarities.
And I don't think people think that they can actually do, you know, get through it until they're actually put in that situation. Because I'm sure, as you have had people say to you, well, I don't know how you got through it, because I don't think I would have. It's like, yes, you would, because it's your life.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. You tend to have a bar, you know, your perceived breaking point. And so many times you think you're there, and then all of a sudden that bar gets raised and, and something else horrific happens, and you realize, boy, yesterday wasn't so bad, because today is really bad, you know. And you're right. You're able to absorb so much more than you think you can, and you don't realize it until that bar gets raised and your limits are really tested.
And that going through Ironman, I bet being healthy as you were for doing the Ironman helped you beating cancer and going through treatment
so.
And everything. Well, I think that's what, you know, I think a lot of people, you know, unfortunately, who aren't cancer survivors, don't really think about exercising or even walking, you know, 30 minutes a day. And then, you know, if you do unfortunately happen to get sick or something, as in my case, I was going to the gym for playing hockey, and the doctor said, I think you went through chemo better than most because you went to the gym, you exercised. And you know,
I think it's so important. So not only does it help with your recovery, I really think it helps with the, you know, the delivery of the drugs themselves, but then just emotionally, you know, I mean, that's something you love to do, and this is something I love to do. So if you were to take that away and then be faced with something like a cancer diagnosis,
right,
that's a lot to deal with. So anytime you can remain in motion, you can keep active, you can kind of hold on to the things that make you feel good while you're going through something that is not too good, it's got to help.
Look at all these books that you have written. This is we're going to get to your latest one in a minute, but how did you, like, what, oh, Iron
Where they come from?
Where do they come from? Because I know a lot of people want to write, but then they never do, but you actually have.
In most cases, it's not that I looked ahead and I said, I think I'm going to create something. It's more like I looked behind me and realized I've written some fun things and or I've had some interesting experiences. So let me just quickly document some of those things. The first book I wrote, which was kind of like a prequel to the most recent, it's just called My New Race. And that was nothing more than, at the time, and this is back in 2006, it was what I thought my cancer diagnosis and treatment was back then. Mm-hmm. You know, it was just the original diagnosis, and then through the first, like, 7 months of the experience, and then across the finish line of an Ironman triathlon at the end of those 7 months. But since then, I've had, you know, years, you know, that was 2006. So I've had lots of years of follow-up treatments and a couple of relapses. And of course the periodic blood check and PET scan and CAT scan that everyone gets all kinds of anxious to get.
Anxiety, exactly. Yes.
Yeah. You know, you get days or a week worth of buildup to not want to go have these things done. So the most recent one, simply called Relentless Metal, My Cancer, My Rules, was really, it took a piece of the first book, you know, it really walks readers through from day one, or even before day one, talking a little bit about my, you know, my multi-sport background before I was diagnosed. And then through the original diagnosis, the original treatment, all the follow-ups, a lot of the appointments, and a lot of this stuff I was blogging as I was going. So a lot of it's, you know, kind of firsthand things I was thinking and feeling as I was going through treatment.
Now, since this book came out, have you given it to any survivors and have them read it and get their take on saying like, oh, yeah, we even though we're not the same cancer, we all share some of the same experiences?
I have. And the reception has been really, really good. You know, it's bittersweet. It's like you don't want people to read that and be able to relate to it.
But exactly.
But the sad truth is, you know, so many people can read that and relate to it. And even if you're not a survivor, we're all survivors in one way, shape, or form, because we're either, you know, someone close to us is, or, you know, it's ominously close to us at some point in our lives. So I think even if you're a supporter or a loved one or whatever your situation might be, there's something in there for just about everyone, I think.
So, well, before we get into the meat of the book, which you kind of did a little, tell me about this Lulu.com, because I know a lot of people want to write books and they're not sure where to start. And I've heard some things about Lulu, but I'm not quite sure what it's all about.
Yeah, so Lulu is a self-publishing tool and organization. And I was the same way. Like, when I first set out I want to put some of these things out there in the universe, but I don't know how to do it. So I just went about some Google searches and tried to figure out what are some avenues that I can do that. Did a little bit of research, and I landed with Lulu because they provide great tools, and they provide, like, a la carte services for anything you want to use them for, from basic editing through aggressive distribution.
Oh.
And, you know, they'll help get you into all the major retailers. They'll help you with anything you want help with.
Mm-hmm.
Or if you don't want help, they'll basically just be the back office to help you get whatever your project is out there into the world. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it required no initial outlay of cash for me. It's a print-on-demand process for the print books.
Oh, okay.
So there's no inventory that anyone needs to, order or warehouse or worry about.
You don't have a whole bunch of books in your garage going, oh, my gosh.
I do not.
That's good.
Somebody wants one, they order one, or we order it for them, and it's printed, and it arrives at their doorstep, and I don't have anything, you know, I don't have any excess to worry about.
That's excellent.
But the most recent one is strictly ebook format, so we don't even have, there's no inventory there. That's, just on your readers, on your either iTunes or
Kindle or whatever.
Nope,
you have.
Nope. Nope, Kindle, right, yeah.
And do you like that format a little better? Because you feel that more people are going that?
I mean, I think that's the way everyone's going anyway. It's nice to have to put your hands on something, but
yes,
the reality is people have their devices with them much more than they would think to pick up a copy of a book. You know what
that's
I mean?
True. So, that's true.
I just think it's a more accessible outlet. And for purely selfish reasons, let's just say you find an error in your digital project. It's something that you can easily fix. And then for the next, you know, once the revision is uploaded, it's the next person to purchase it now has the corrected copy. So it just provides some more flexibility that print media does not.
Oh. So My Relentless Metal, tell me about, now you said you got, most of this was started with your blogging through your chemo and everything.
Yep.
Tell me about some of the tips actually that you would give survivors, because I know a lot of people who are first starting treatment, like I'm on a lot of Facebook pages, are like, I'm just starting this and I don't know what to expect. And I think a lot of survivors, like you said, like I've met survivors and we all have the same thing in common, like, you know, this chemo makes me sick, or how do I get rid of the metal taste in my mouth? And when will my hair grow back? But that, you know, but
it's funny because I asked that question when I was going through when my doctor first prescribed treatment, and unless you've seen it on my website, you wouldn't know. But I mean, I buzz my hair very, very, very closely with a buzzer once a week. So there's practically nothing there, but it's by choice, right?
Right.
And when my doctor was talking about the chemo drugs, I looked up at him and I said, so am I going to lose my hair? And he looked up from his laptop and gave me this cross-eyed look like, why in God's name would you care about that? And, you know, we had a laugh about it and moved on and went about our business. But I think the biggest thing that scares me, and you just hit it spot on, I see so many people asking so many questions, but they're not necessarily asking them in the right places. You know, I mean, Facebook is not the best place to ask a gazillion strangers about a treatment drug or a side effect or, you know, something related to your cancer diagnosis. It's okay as a support group, but, you know, you really need to ask the right questions of the right healthcare providers. And you can ask them to refer you to approved websites and, you know, recommended various resources, but don't just randomly and blindly. It's just a,
right.
It's a recipe. It's a bad news recipe for sure.
Well, yeah.
And I guess one of the other, you know, asking for tips, the other thing that people tend to do is they, you know, they look at a diagnosis and they just, the blinders go on and they can't think of anything except, you know, the oh my God syndrome. And
yes.
How do I possibly get through this? And you really need to kind of shift your thinking. And it's hard. You know, it obviously is easier said than done, but you need to ask the questions. You need to get your multiple opinions if you need be, and mm-hmm. you need to really focus on what's the course of action and take things one step, one appointment, one doctor's visit, one whatever at a time, and kind of celebrate those little milestones. You know, you can't think about, and again, using the multi-sport racing mm-hmm. analogy, you line up at the start of an Ironman or a marathon, if you think about having 3 hours or 15 hours of racing ahead of you, you're going to lose your mind.
Oh, yes.
But if you can work your way through from 1 mile to the next, or from the swim to the bike to the run, or from one, you know, aid station to the next, or whatever it might be, just like from one chemo treatment to the mm-hmm. next doctor's appointment to the next blood draw or whatever it might be, if you can kind of focus on those small incremental steps, it's going to really help, I think, with you processing the entire elephant that's sitting in front of you.
Well, I agree, because when they tell you a course of treatment, they're like, at least for me, it was like, okay, you'll have chemo, you'll have radiation. Well, it's first surgery, chemo, radiation, Herceptin, and then you're done. And, you know, and you're basically thrown this like giant, you know, little snowball that turns into an avalanche at you. And you're like,
that's right.
What?
Yeah.
And like you said, you can't think of it. It's like, okay, I think every survivor thinks of like, okay, well, here's my endpoint. This is the last day of my chemo treatment. That's the day, if you have a port, I'll get my port put out, or there's my 5 year. But you can't, like you said, you can't think of it as like, okay, well, the adriamycin cytoxin is making me sick, so of course the next one thing will make me sick, and that and that and that. If, like you said, if you do that,
right.
Your head will implode. And another good thing a doctor told me is, when you're first diagnosed, don't go to Dr. Google and Google about your disease.
No.
Because I was like, me too. Yep. Mm-hmm. And my fiance is like, why did you do that? Because, you know, you read all these symptoms and it's like the wine list that you don't want. No, thank you. I don't want nausea or hair loss or anything like that. And you're reading this big list of symptoms that you know, of course, since you're just diagnosed, you're like, oh, my God, I'm going to get everything that's on here, which for most people, I would say, you know, that's not necessarily the case. And like you said, you have to think one step at a time. And, you know, I think most cancer survivors like you, like, do the little countdown. It's like, okay, well, you know, I'm done with my first treatment, three more to go. Yes, I made it through this one. Like you said, like your first stage, I made it through the run. Now the next thing is the bike. It's the same thing when I play hockey. If you think, well, I'm going to score a goal sometime in these next three periods, all I'll think about is that and not focus on the entire game. And then,
that's right.
And then
yeah.
be no use to the team or anybody else. And I think
for me, you're talking about playing, you know, consulting Dr. Google, the first couple of sites that I came across
yes.
were actually memorial sites set up by loved ones who lost someone to the disease. And I closed my laptop like, oh, this isn't a good idea, you know?
Yeah.
So I learned very, very quickly that that's not the right way to go about this.
And you have to understand that survivors who are just diagnosed or caregivers, every person is different. You know, my cancer is not the same as someone else who has breast cancer. Your cancer is not the same as someone else who had your type of cancer. It's just not the same. I may, you know, I didn't get nauseous that much, but someone else may. And like you said, you're not a doctor, but what happened to you when you're hoping that you can give some advice? It's like me. I'm not a doctor. This is what
That's
happened
right.
to me. But
yeah.
I always tell people, you know, I press buttons for a living and talk on the air. So
yeah.
if you want to take your medical advice from me, I would highly recommend a second opinion or someone with an MD behind your voice, behind their name. But I can tell you what I went through. And if that helps you, if you can take a grain or a little nugget out of that, then that's what I'm looking for. And that's what you're looking for with your book, Relentless Metal.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, I tell people all the time, you know, no two individuals are the same. I can't tell you how your experience is going to be, but I'll be brutally honest and completely open with everything that I went through. And everything that I was thinking, and, you know, surely you're going to ask some of the same questions. You can at least see how I may have processed some things or what I may have done, and that might spark something in you to know how you then want to react to some of this stuff.
Right. Now, your daughter and your wife contributed to your book.
Both daughters, actually. Yes,
both daughters,
they did.
Okay.
And I thought that would be a great, since they were such a critical part of all of it, right? I
yes.
mean, they were.
What was that like? I mean, I just have the website here, thelulu.com. How many chapters did they write? What did they talk about? Because it's very interesting being a caregiver and a family member. It's always interesting to see the other side of the coin once you're out of treatment, you know.
Right, and that's what I wanted to do, because family members are always so impacted with something like this, and they were so involved. My wife has come to every single doctor's appointment and every single chemo treatment, and my daughters have done a lot of the same. They've come to some of the chemo treatments, and you know, we're certainly on the edge of their seat with whatever news I had from checkups or whatever. So I thought it would be nice just to get, you know, the one chapter is called Through Her Eyes, and that's my wife, Mary Grace, telling it in her words and in her perspective what this whole journey has been like. And then my two daughters, Jennifer and Danielle, just share a chapter called Through Their Eyes, and each talk, you know, a little bit about how it was when we first broke the news to them, and what it was like for them watching me go through treatment, and how it was, you know, the impression that it's made on them then, and some of the things they've carried on as, you know, adults now in their lives.
How did that affect you reading that? Because I'm sure you, I mean, I know you as a family, you probably talked about it. Or sometimes
it
family members
touching.
don't talk about it because, you know, your wife and your daughters, they want to be the strong ones for you. And they don't want to say like, oh, my God, this is freaking me out. Or I'm so worried that he's going to die.
Yep. Yeah. And that's the first thing they all said was, well, what do you want me to say? And I'm like, that's the whole point. You tell me what you want to say. And you know, what jumps out at you? Like, what raw emotion is, what's your recall of that whole experience?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it was pretty moving. And I remember, you know, you mentioned Ethan Zahn at the top of our talk. And
yes.
I remember when my daughter Jennifer first wrote hers and sent it to me as a draft, and I was reading through it, I copied and pasted some pieces of it, and I sent it to Ethan, and I said, dude, you have to read this. And I explained what the context was. A couple days later, he writes back. He says, oh, my God, I just now got around to reading this. This is incredible. He said, what that must have done, you know, it must have strengthened your relationship. And, I mean, you know, he was just really touched by it. And I thought that was a really neat thing to add to the book as well.
Right, because a lot of people, when they do their books and everything, it's I don't want to say it's all about them, but, you know, from the caregiver family perspective is huge. Because a lot of, I think they're the unsung heroes in all of this. Yes, we have our doctors and the medical professionals, but if we don't have our caregivers, our family, our friends, then we're basically set adrift on, you know, out in the middle of nowhere.
Yeah, and it was nice meeting my wife's perspective because she,
yes,
you know, she brought up some things that, in some cases, I've either forgotten or just, you know, I've failed to highlight over the years. And in reading them, I'm like, oh my God, yeah, remember that, you know? So it was nice to revisit some of those things, and then, you know, to hear the impact that they had on her was kind of heartwarming too.
And was it kind of scary reading anything that they had written? Like, we were really afraid that Dad was going to die, or my husband, Steven.
No, it really wasn't. You know, I think they all took their lead from me right out of the gate, and that was very positive, and that was very upbeat. So I, you know, to this day, I don't think anyone's ever had the dire straits mentality, and you know, I want to think the way I've led this charge has a lot to do with that, and that was all part of the design of how I wanted to handle the treatment.
Right, because I mean, you're an Ironman, so you can't just like stop in the middle of the race and quit. I mean, you could,
but you
can't. You know, your whole goal is making it to the finish, and that's, you know, that's a great metaphor for finishing up chemo, finishing up your treatment, and going on with life. I mean, your finish line is basically, you know, you're going to keep going with this even though you're done with treatment, and you're, you know, your book is just part of your race, and you're going to have more books and more races. And it looks like you have a radio show too. Is that correct?
Yeah, I haven't been real active with that. That was just another one of those things where I'm like, hey, I have things to say. I need to find an outlet to say them. So we did a number of shows with some pretty fun guests, and Ethan was actually one of my first ones. But it's one that I really haven't had the time to dedicate a whole lot of energy to as of late, but we may revisit that at some point.
So are you doing a lot of runs or speeches, or what do you have coming up?
I'm trying to nail down the races for 2015. So there's a number of, you know, what we call A races, or the bigger events of the year. You know, there's a half Ironman, an Ironman, at least one marathon, maybe possibly two. And then coaching for a couple of different races too, because I coach with the Leukemia and Lymphoma Society's team and training program.
Oh, cool.
So we have those events on the calendar. And then it's like sprinkle in the smaller races here and there where there's available weekends. And then I'm always able and willing, anybody that wants to, you know, hear the story, I'm more than happy to talk to groups, you know, about either the cancer experience or the triathlon experience, or how they all intersect.
Now, which is your favorite part of the triathlon? Is it the run,
the
swim?
The finish line, does that count?
It does count, but I mean the run, the bike, or the swim, if you had your choice.
It seems like my favorite is whatever one I'm not doing at that moment, right?
Why am I doing 26 miles?
Yeah, but, you know, I've always had a little bit of anxiety in the water, and I think pretty common, especially when you're talking about 2.4 miles.
That does sound like a lot.
Yeah, and 112 miles on the bike, you're in the back of your mind, you're always like, what if something mechanical goes wrong that takes me out of this event? That would be the worst, with like totally out of my control. So I guess, I mean, cycling has always been my favorite, but at the same time, 112 miles of that gets a little daunting as well. And then again, you have that looming, you know, if I'm taken out as a result of a mechanical something or other.
Right.
So usually what happens is you get out of the water, you make it through the swim, you get through the bike, and you're getting ready to head on out onto the run, and you make this insane statement that's something like, oh, phew, all we have to do now is run 26.2 miles. And I know it sounds nuts, but it's the truth, because the only thing keeping you from the finish now is heart and desire. You know what I mean? Like, you're not going to drown. You're not going to, mechanically, you're not going to break down on the side of the road. So now it's just kind of putting one foot in front of the other. So I don't know. Maybe the run is, but ask me tomorrow and I might give you a different answer.
If we were doing a video of this show, you would have seen my jaw drop when you said 112 miles. Is that the usual for Ironman? Yikes.
Yeah, it's a nutty thing, isn't it?
It is. Who came up with those numbers? That's weird.
So a bunch of goofy guys in California back in 1978 when they were all experts in their respective sport, and they had the challenge that said, well, let's put them all together, and whoever wins is the fittest, and we'll call him the Iron Man.
That's crazy. Do you have any speaking engagements coming up?
I don't have anything on the books right now. No, I do not.
Oh, well, why not? You got your book out.
Yeah, I know, but that's what I was getting ready to say. There's like, I have all these, I mentioned at the beginning that I have some catching up to do.
Yes.
With emails and phone calls, and I know there's some people inquiring and asking questions, and there's some dates I need to nail down on a couple different things, but that's part of what I need to get caught up on.
Because I think this book would be great in hospitals and, chemo treatment rooms and infusion rooms, just as like something to look at.
And you know what? That was the goal. I have written other things. You know, life's events move me and usually move me to write something. Sadly, or not sadly, depending on how you look at it, sometimes death is one of those life events.
Yes.
So I find myself writing a lot when someone passes. I did not want to include that kind of thing in this book.
Right.
Because I wanted it to be a kind of a Bible of hope for
I like that.
For anyone going through treatment. And the last thing they need to read is a story about someone who lost their battle. You know, that wasn't the goal at all.
Exactly. Here you're all upbeat and it's like, my friend just passed away. Well, yeah, that kind of puts it's hard.
Yeah, upbeat, it's upbeat, but it's real. It's not,
right.
It's not cheerleader stuff, but it's, you know, I talk about my bad days, but I also try to intersperse, okay, so it's a bad day, but the beauty of today is if it's bad, it's going to end, and tomorrow's going to be another shot at something different. So,
exactly.
You know, I try to work that out.
And I think a lot of people, like, you know, you and I try to stay positive, but we do have bad days as cancer survivors, and sometimes when you're feeling in that cancer bubble and you feel like no one else feels the same way you do, well, that's not true. And I had a hard time. Like, I had battles with depression, and then finally a friend of mine who was a cancer survivor said, we all feel that way. And it was just like, you know, the clouds opened up and it was like kind of like hallelujah moment, you know, because it's hard talking about stuff like that, but once you realize that that's unfortunately, you know, everybody has bad days.
You're not alone. We're all having bad days. Mm-hmm. Everybody that you bump into is going through something.
Exactly. But as cancer survivors, we feel like that we're alone.
Absolutely.
But the point of your book and the point of the show is saying, you know, you're not alone. If you feel depressed because of cancer, then, you know, find somebody to talk about it with, because you're not alone. Everybody gets, not everybody gets, but a lot of people get those feelings. And that's okay.
Yeah, and it is hard. So you need, you know, that was part of what I wanted to do early on, is I wanted to make it known that I'm available, you know.
Right.
I wanted to be a resource. I wanted to be a voice where I could be, you know, without, I don't want to force my story on anybody.
Right.
And I don't want to talk, you know, pull words out of someone who doesn't want to talk. But
exactly.
I'm approached by, because I belong to a couple different patient advocacy groups, like Immerman Angels, mm-hmm. and Livestrong has one, and Leukemia and Lymphoma Society has one. So when I am contacted by a fellow recently diagnosed patient, it's just so heartwarming for me to be able to sit down and have a conversation, because in some cases, okay, the doctor was the first conversation.
Mm-hmm.
In some cases, I'm the second or third, you know, and
That's
they're
awesome.
Like, what is happening to me? and I'm like, oh, all right, get comfortable. Let's talk about it. You know what I mean? And that just makes me feel good that I was able to provide some sense of, okay, I'm not predicting your future, but I'm at least telling you that back in 2006, here's what's happened to me. And quite frankly, I think my life got better as a result and not worse. And here's why. And it's helped.
And just like that, a half hour's over. You are an amazing man. And I know you're laughing like, oh, pshaw.
Well, thank you.
But how can people find you on the internet? I know we have remissionman.com. Where else can we find you?
Yeah, that's the best bet. Remissionman.com actually has links to everything else. So, I mean, it's got my contacts. It's got links to LinkedIn and Facebook and Twitter. And it's got information on the current book as well as all the other titles. And that's my one-stop shop for anything that I might have to say. So that's the best place to stay dialed in.
Excellent, Stephen. Thank you so much for sharing your story with us today. I'm going to wrap up like I usually do. This is Mel Majoris. You can always find me on Facebook because I am a Facebook junkie, at Mel Majoris. Check out my new updated website, thecancerwarrior.net. And as always, life looks pretty good from where I'm sitting. Sending you good vibes. It's The Cancer Warrior on EmpowerRadio.com.